Snyder, and present on Teams, Co-Chair Tiffany Lopeski, Representative Ivy Spanholz, Representative Perka, and there appears to be eight at the moment. Please let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. For the couple folks in the room at this meeting, please ensure that your cell phones are on silent. Before we begin, I would like to thank Kelsey Reichert, the House Health and Social Services Recording Secretary, and Kira Wilson Edwards, who will be the LIO for staffing the committee today. We have two items on today's agenda, the first being a corrective hearing on HB 392, expanded gift practice registered nurse funding by myself for President Steiner. And then we will move on to addressing amendments for House Bill 292. And community-based waiver services, as it so happens, also co-sponsored by myself. I'm there. I'm going to look at
I guess they're excited to return the House Bill 292.
I mean, there's a thing. So with HB 392, that's where we're going to start today. Our first order of business is the Advanced Practice Registered Nurse Authority. We have the following individuals on the line for invited testimony, and they are available for questions. Team Wiseman, Emergency Program Manager, Division of Public Health. Tessa Walker-Lipman, Executive Director, Board of Nursing. Marianne Patson-Petty, Family Nurse Practitioner, Doctor of Nursing Practice. Stephanie Wrightson-Bulch, Advanced Practice Registered Nurse. Shannon Hilton, Doctor of Nursing Practice. And Priya Keeney, Doctor of Nursing Practice. I'll begin with a brief intro. My staff will go over a section, and then you will hear from a short list of invited testifiers and open up briefly for public testimony. In the interest of time, I will let members hold questions until the end of the invited testimony, and we'll open up for a single round of questions before moving on to HB 292. Let's see. Additionally, as we said in the notice earlier today, the amendment deadline for HB 392 is Monday, April 4 at noon, but please do let the Commissioner's Office know as soon as you can if you're working on it, and I'll send out one more time. Amendments are due on Monday, April 4th at noon. Okay, so we will now start by looking through and introduce HB 392.
Madam Chair, just a quick question.
Yes, Representative Lopeski.
Thank you. Just to clarify, the bill are going to be drafted and final formed by that legal prior to submission.
Yes, that is my expectation. Thank you for that, Representative Lopeski. Do we have any additional questions from the committee? Okay. Great. Thank you. So, I'd first like to start with a handful of concerns that motivated the drafting and introduction of House Bill 392. And then I will move into the components of the bill, which is pretty straightforward, and I think readers will get the primary gist and key components by looking at the sectional in and of itself. But first, I'd like to paint a quick picture for you in terms of what motivated us to write this bill. We are concerned about a few things here in healthcare, the provision of healthcare here in Alaska. When we are hearing reports of delays for families, when we are navigating post-mortem matters such as Social Security applications and benefits that require death certificates. And I will direct individuals, you should have in your bill packet the APR Alliance web feature that details some of the same information I'm sharing with you now. We're also concerned about increased costs to the patient, with respect to really some of the abilities required. With respect to signing death certificates and licensing procedures, for example, if one of the physicians in this bill would expand that to APR, and I will describe that in more detail in just a moment. We're concerned about obstruction for care for seriously ill. We're also concerned about patient harm and inadequate documentation of patient health care preferences. So, what HB 392 does, it gives advanced practice registered nurses, otherwise known as APRNs, signature authority for death certificates, do not resuscitate orders, and the physician orders for life-sustaining treatment, otherwise known as POST. APRNs, for those additional education and specialized training. The department independently in the state of Alaska, and we've had the authority to do that since 1984. And in fact, Alaska's on the first to do this for APLNs. They're even recognized as primary care providers, just like we many of us ourselves have received primary care from APRN. APLNs frequently oversee and provide care. They participate in difficult discussions with patients and family members that help make the best decisions for care. However, as we'll highlight here with HB 392, our current statute does not allow APRNs to sign the official papers documenting or finalizing these decisions. Only physicians can, as our current statute is written. This is as I referenced momentarily, we know this can cause administrative delays and undue additional stress for families. So HB 392, it simply allows APRNs to sign off on the care they have provided. Have provided for quite some time over the years, and while HB 392 is narrow in scope, it does help vulnerable populations through difficult times. And I will invite my people staff, Ms. Summer Peak, to come up and walk us through the section.
Sections 134 updates ADAS Family 58700 determination of death by our distributors. This section is in fact by registered nurses and PRNs. We have already documented and anticipated deaths that a registered nurse could perform or determine the death in a healthcare facility. As the gift by PRNs, the physician authority is certified in status. Without it, we can do it as that earlier other physicians have the statutory authority to do this. And it also adds conforming language to ensure that PRNs are subject to the same policies and protocols as physicians. Sections 538 amends and 13-6-0-6-5 do not resist to the protocol and identification requirements. And then APRN's authority to issue a DNR order and if a patient requests it or not, we also add conforming language. Section 9 amends 13-52-0-0 immunities by adding APRNs to Section 5. This policy impacts the healthcare facility or accident dates. Which means a healthcare facility or acting good faith will be subject to civil and criminal liability if CPRs are held at the authorization of a physician or an APRN. Section 10 adds APRN statutes regarding protocols for decisions around DNR, CPR, and other life-sustaining procedures. Section 11 adds APRNs to the advanced healthcare directive form. Section 12 and 14 updates definitions in this section relevant to this section and include APRN. And Section 15 allows APRNs to certify grounds for patients whose care they were interested in. Thank you.
So at this point, we will move on to hearing written testimony from a series of these individuals I introduced at the beginning of this hearing. They have read up for public testimony and then turn to community members with questions. First, we will hear written testimony from Mary Ann Dawson-Petty, family nurse practitioner. Ms. Dawson-Petty, please state your name and affiliation. And just for the record, I'll proceed with your testimony. And if I may add, for the benefit of all testifiers today, invited testifiers today, if you could please limit your testimony to 3 minutes, that would be much appreciated. Ms. Dawson-Petty.
Are you able to hear me?
We hear you loud and clear. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you. Madam Chair, Madam Co-Chair, and members of the city, my name is Mary Dawson-Petty. I represent Health and Services Nurse, or APRN, here on behalf of the Los Angeles APRN, the Workers' Providence Alaska Medical Center. Thank you for allowing me to speak with you today. I'm also privileged to Chris Clark, the Secretary of Finance, for the well-founded instructions and
Thank you, Madam Chair and Madam Co-Chair. I'm Stephanie Weissmuller. Please give me a vote. Thank you for Mr. Harris for the master's degree in nursing as well as the master's degree in public health. I'm certified as a family nurse practitioner and work at an East Anchorage clinic that's owned and operated by all family nurse practitioners. We provide primary care for our ethnically and culturally diverse population of patients of all ages with a focus on chronically ill adults, many including first and nursing nurses. 60% of our practice has Medicaid or and/or Medicare as their primary supplemental payment, and many of our patients come with a long list of chronically ill conditions that they have not had care for many, many years. I'm testifying in support of HB 392. First, the ALS and their families help them navigate very complex healthcare systems, and they often struggle to get the care and support that they need. At the practice that is found itself entirely by family nurse practitioners, our care focuses on helping the patients to manage their healthcare needs to the best of their abilities, provide services through the healthcare home, and ensure that they get specialty care needed near referrals to specialists. As an HR is working, I have seen firsthand how the lack of signature authority affects patient care. When patients have been trapped in our practice for years, and our practice has been operational for nearly 20 years, we have over 35,000 patients that we have seen in that time. I have been associated with them for 13 years. And so many of our patients have been cared for many, many years. They may pass away at home, and the deaths have been determined to be of natural causes by the medical examiner. Our practice providers, however, are unable to legally sign a death certificate. Many of our patients who have died at home have been seen at our clinic, as I mentioned, for several years, but they have physician specialists that may have referred them to, but on a case-by-case basis. Because of their limited involvement, physician specialists are often unable to sign documents such as death certificates. And as a result, many of the practitioners, such as myself, are expected to sign and hire a physician at our own cost who will do any care of a deceased patient, validate the cause of death, and sign the death certificate. Lifetime estimates of cost from physician providers may be anywhere from $500 to $5,000 that I would have to pay for out of pocket. This is an undue burden for families who end up waiting additional time or actually negotiate a physician who's willing to do this. And for the process to take place, this was an additional burden to myself and other colleagues, ECRNs, from a time and cost perspective. We also need our patients and families to deserve the best care possible. HB 392 will help as many of the veterans in Alaska. I urge you to pass this bill out of committee in a timely manner. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. We will now hear from Shannon Elkin, Doctor of Nursing Practice. As a reminder, I'd like you to state your name and affiliate yourself for yourself on the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, my name is Shannon Hilton. I am a practice registered nurse and a practitioner specific. I have a doctorate degree in nursing practice. And I have only worked as a medical gerontology assistant nurse practitioner and a certified adult health nurse practitioner. I practice in clinical counseling in English and have been in practice for 11 years. I have testified in support of House Bill 392
Thank you.
as the Managing Director for Corporations Business and Professional Licensing of the Department of Commerce. So we will now turn to committee members. If you have any questions, please let me know. I appreciate we have meeting on Teams. Please feel free to go off mute and alert me. I also like to check with our staff in the room to see if we have any additional numbers on the telephone that I did not recognize. Okay, thank you. Okay, well, that was a quick introductory hearing. We will move forward here expeditiously as questions. So, to round this part of our hearing out today, as a reminder, if you recognize, as I said just a moment ago, HB 92 hearings are due Monday, April 4th at 12 p.m. Please let us know in advance if you are working on it. Make sure that those are making our drafting knowledge legal so that we can accept them ahead of or on the new deadline on Monday. We will now move on to voting on amendments for HB 292. Please. Okay, we are back on the record. Thank you. So we are returning to HB 292, Home and Community Services. Before we consider amendments, I just want to provide a quick recap since it's been a while since we've looked at HB 292. This is addressing the growing demand for home and community-based care that we're seeing in our state, yet we seem to be lacking some important components in our infrastructure and ability to meet that growing demand. So HB 292 is designed to address a few of those challenges that seem to be persisting to assist the department in providing the services required of Alaskans. HB 292 does this through the following. It increases the threshold for reducing services. It provides a way to restore previous service level cuts and terminations. It allows legally responsible individuals like family to be compensated for the care that they provide. And also, as a quick reminder, we have heard both public and invited testimony in the preceding couple of weeks in support of this bill. And today, we turn to amendments. But before we do that, I'd like to highlight we have two individuals on the line available for questions. Those individuals are Alexis Rogers, who's with SCIU 775, and we also have a disability division of senior and disability services with the Department of Health and Social Services. We have six amendments to consider today. Two of them are for myself, one is offered by Representative Spanholtz, and we have three offered by Representative McCary. We will move through these amendments in the order of the amendment packet. Thank you. Department does increase that rate, then you'd be at risk of losing the increased federal HCBS match. I can also add that when we hear from Representative Sponholz and discuss her amendment, there is likely an opportunity to address the rezoning process in that amendment. Next, then, rule number two, we are posting some language in here with respect to personal care services and some language around being able to function in a home setting with reduced level services and some language pertaining to termination of payment for services. And some of the rationale behind that, so I want to make sure I'm addressing the correct point here. In this instance, we are reducing services only for personal care services. The service is most often referenced by personal care assistants and other caregivers, which we heard in testimony around service level reduction, rather than having us bill focus on all home and community-based services. Again, this amendment was made after conversations with the department and with stakeholders. The idea is that focusing on personal care services as an all health and community services would reduce the administrative costs associated with implementation. Another component on page 3, line 8, as well as page 3, line 13, we are addressing some concerns again that came up in ongoing conversations with the department and the stakeholders that adding that rule language would cause some additional challenges to implementing this bill that we did not want to introduce at this time. It addresses the federal observation of interior with improved language is tied to the assessment of functional ability. And we do recognize that, speaking for myself as the sponsor for the bill, recognize that every individual should have access to services and development tools independently. We see this as an all inclusive HCBS. However, we do believe that this is something that should be introduced in the part of the clients, caregivers, and the organizations working with them, so that we can have a definition as an assessment that accurately and effectively describes what living independently entails. Moving through amendment number two, we're revisiting significant update here is on page 3, lines 25 through 27, clarifying some language with respect to those conducting independent assessments. So this change was made after an observation provided by the department regarding the definition of an independent healthcare provider. The new definition does not require an independent healthcare provider to be certified to provide personal care services since a registered or advanced practice registered nurse licensed under ASCOE.CC would be qualified to assess individuals receiving personal care services. So amendment number two collectively is to clear up language and clarifying language in response to conversations with the department and the stakeholders involved in developing HB 292. Representative Zukoski, do you entertain your objection?
No, Madam Chair, my objection.
Do you have any additional objections? All right, Madam Chair, amendment number two is adopted. We will move on to amendment number three.
I move amendment number three.
I'll object for the purposes of discussion.
Thank you. Amendment number three seeks to require the department to create a one-time report to study and make recommendations related to the payment rate for home and community-based services and improving the availability of care for Alaskans in need of caregivers described by this bill. We've been hearing from constituents who have brought testimony about the low wages of caregivers and that the low wages may be a contributing factor to reducing access to services that are so needed. We don't have very good visibility on the demand and how rates impact that demand. And react if experiencing a crisis in elder care and care for those with disabilities. And this crisis is just going to increase as our population ages. We're asking the department to create a one-time report that would give the legislature some visibility as well as make some recommendations. We have to have approved for availability and make some important choices.
Representative Kim McCarty has joined us on Teams at a little bit before 3:56, but it is now 3:56, and we're back on the record. Representative McCarty, for your benefit, I know that you were providing, you were presenting another bill in another committee, so you did some of the initial work on our amendments to HB 392, but do you also have 3 amendments that you would like to offer? Before I turn to you to offer your amendments, I did want to give you the benefit of a brief update and allow you a moment to evaluate your representation. Okay, fantastic that the record is up. So, this is the record of the McCarty has joined us in person. As I was saying, we can take a moment if you would like to. According to my reading, and I encourage you and welcome you to confirm this that you would agree, that Amendment number 2, which we just adopted a moment ago, reflects the same changes that you were proposing in Amendment number 4, as well as in Amendment number 6, specifically speaking to a reduction in the payment of services and the terminology, movement terminology. My reading of your amendment number 4 is that it does differ from the adopted amendment number 2 with respect to you've also chosen to reduce the level of services. So I just wanted to highlight that for you. We can take a brief pause if you'd like to take a moment with that information and decide whether you'd like to proceed with your amendments.
Yes, services, which was done in Amendment 2, that it will allow the city or reduce the level of services. And I believe that should be in that terms of this amendment, because term medical necessity is a terminology for need of service, and it's standard in the industry. And so, if a person has medical necessity for treatment, then there would be a reduction of the level of services as well. It would be also the components of the patients and to reduce that the services too. So, I believe that if we don't have it in there as, if it stays in there or reduce the level of services, it leaves it kind of locked in where the medical necessity to join it, they don't need the services.
Do we have any questions from the committee?
Thank you to the chair. But regarding the page 114, that again, as seen in the amount two, that the reduction of payment for service is most needed. And so, two is the question is your determination of payment for services is also included in here. Level of service. And so if somebody is in less type of level of service, this seems to say they cannot get a less level of service. They have to stay with these services. That was placed in treatment intervention at the very beginning. And let's see if this falls the medical necessity of a person is tapered in their need for services. So.
Thank you, Representative Hardy. I'm going to do my objection, so we will ask the clerk to call.
Did you call it?
Yes.
No.
Because the amendment number 5 is now assuming that in knowing in the state we have the powers to do assessments, and that in the set is now up to recipients to provide assessments on an annual basis. And if that's being thwarted by not being able to find professionals to do these independent assessments, that would enable assessment, which means an assessment every 2 years, be beneficial. Most recently, talking to the department, that they were stating that it's possibly a challenge for the biennial, and if I understand that correctly, if the department could make a statement to you, this amendment, is that possible?
We have currently the director of senior disability services with the department, and we have Mr. Senior, are you there? Thank you. Representative Cohen, would you like to rephrase it as a question for Mr. Lee?
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Lee, the amendment 5 is changed from a meeting to a meeting for the assessment, so it gives you more time and not have to take out a large caseload of assessing. And is this still something that would be helpful for you or not? Six, that the federal subcommittee has been attended to in amendment number 2. However, in amendment number 6, on page 2 of the bill, line 26, there is the deletion of and this independently, that doesn't appear to have been in amendment number 2. So, the other pieces was attended to in amendment number 2.
Correct. Let's see. We'll take a brief phase to look at this question.
that paragraph, paid up debt with service dredging on page 226. So with that, then we will come on with 6.
Since we all have seen the same numbers and editing difference over the last couple of hours, so thank you for that. Okay, that brings us to the end of our hearing. If you find more performance here, the next meeting of the House Health and Social Services Committee will be meeting on Thursday, March 31st, 2022, at 3 p.m. in Davis 106 or on Teams. We currently have HB 392 scheduled for a second hearing, an introductory hearing on HB 295, and a specialty license legalizing equipment by Representative Cortez. And one of the recent increasing cases in Budget Manual 4, we recognize that the schedule might change, and we will certainly update committee members as soon as we are able. And I thank you for your patience on that. And as always,